Romans chapter 12, verses 17 to 21. Let's just read them to begin with. Beginning with verse number 17. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. The story is told of a lady that had two very special chickens. They were her prized chickens, and she took good care of those chickens, and really, you know, they were her pets. And one day they got out of their pen and went over to the neighbor's, who was a grouchy old man, and they started scratching in his garden and tore up his garden. And he was not at all happy. And he took those chickens and grabbed them by the neck, wrung off their heads, and threw them over the fence back into her yard. Well, she found her two dead chickens in the yard and was very sad and disappointed. And yet at the same time, she wanted to respond in a way that would please the Lord. And so she took the chickens and dressed them and cleaned them and cooked them up and prepared two chicken pies and took one of the chicken pies over to the neighbor. The kids, her kids hid in the bushes to see what the neighbor would do when he opened the door, and she knocked on the door and had the pie in her hand, and she offered the pie to him and says, I'm very sorry my chickens got out and messed up your yard, and I'll do my best to keep the rest of the chickens under control, and I've made a pie for you and show you that I am very sorry. And he was shocked and very ashamed of himself for killing the chickens. But the lady did it so that she could show him Christ's love and respond in a Christ-like manner. And it's not always easy to do that. You know, there's times in our lives when people do things to us that we don't feel like being Christ-like about it. We feel like, you know, giving it back to them. But God wants us to respond in a way that would honor and glorify him. And so this morning as we look at this passage, God is giving us here some instruction and some more character qualities that we need to develop in our lives in order to respond properly to evil. In order for us to respond properly to evil. Several things he points out to us here that can be a help to us. Let's notice, first of all, in verse number 17. Verse 17, he says, recompense to no man evil for evil. Now, we first of all need to respond properly, not returning evil for evil. Now, retaliation is not God's answer. All right, when we talk about retaliation, it's payback. In Papua New Guinea, payback was a big thing. You know, it didn't matter whether you were guilty or not. If you did something, you know, there was no talking about it and deciding whether it was nice or not. They would just retaliate. Like one of the things that was most frightful in Papua New Guinea is driving, and if a little child ran out in front of you and you hit that child, you were in major trouble. Even though it was not your fault, it was the kid's fault completely, you were still in major trouble, because if the family catches you, they'd kill you. You say, but that's not fair. To them, it doesn't matter. Retaliation was the theme of the game there in Papua New Guinea. And so it is so many times in our own hearts, and we need to be very careful about that. And God tells us here that payback for a Christian is not the right attitude. He wants us to have an attitude of treating others like we want to be treated. We read again in Matthew chapter 7 where Jesus said in verse number 12, he said, therefore all things whatsoever you would that men should do unto you, do ye even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Jesus said, you know, we've taken that verse and paraphrased it, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that is God's motto when it comes to dealing with someone who has harmed us. And he says in the same verse, he says, provide things honest in the sight of all men. The little phrase, provide things honest, is an interesting phrase. It doesn't necessarily mean what you think it means. It literally means to give forethought to a good response. To provide things honest. To give forethought to a right response. In other words, think before you act. And it reminds us of what Solomon said over in Proverbs chapter 15, verse number 28, where Solomon wrote, The heart of the righteous studieth to answer, but the mouth of the wicked poureth out evil things. God says the heart of the righteous studies to answer. In other words, we think before we give an answer. We think before we respond. And God wants us to think, ponder over, forethought, have thoughts of what good should I respond to instead of what evil will automatically come to my mind. Because we don't need to think. Our instant reaction is always to do something unkind. That's our human flesh. But God says He wants us to think before we respond. Instead of responding in that instant bad reaction, He wants us to respond in a proper way. Then He goes on to verse number 18. And He says, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Live peaceably with all men. Let's look at the latter part of the verse, because the first part of the verse is descriptive of the latter part. So the first part, the latter part, He starts out and He says that we are to live peaceably with all men. Live peaceably. We are not to provoke others to fight. When men try to, rile us up, it ought not to be us that is igniting it. It ought not to be us that is trying to get things provoked. He says we need to live peaceably with all men. In order to do that, we need to examine our actions. How are we going to respond? Galatians 5, verse 22, one of the verses that describes the fruits of the Spirit, it says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, and temperance, or self-control. And God says that these are the things that ought to govern us. And in that list, He talks about peace. And so God says here that we are to live peaceably with all men. As much as possible, we are to strive to live in peace. That ought to be our goal and our desire and our passion. In Psalm 34 and verse 14, the psalmist wrote, depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. We're to seek peace. And you know, we all know that it's a whole lot happier to live in peace than in conflict. It's a whole lot happier that way. And some people seem to like conflict, but I think deep down inside, even those that seem to like conflict know that it's a whole lot more relaxing and rejoicing in peace. Conflict is not an enjoyable time. I'm reading a book right now about the early American frontier and how there was all kinds of conflicts between the white men and the Indians. And there was wrongs done on both sides, and I'm not justifying either side, but neither of them could sleep in peace at night because they had to be always watching, whether it be the Indians fearing that the white men are going to attack them at night or the white man fearing that the Indians were going to attack them. There was always a fear, and you slept with your gun beside you, and you slept, barely sleeping and ready to jump and take action at any moment for fear of your life. That would be a terrible way to have to live. And yet, in our lives, God says we are to live peaceably with all men. Then He qualifies that in the first part of the verse. He says, if it be possible. If it be possible. In other words, He's indicating there that sometimes it might not be possible. Sometimes it might not be possible to live peaceably. But if it's possible, we need to seek to live peaceably. That ought to be our goal. That ought to be our desire. And He says, as much as lieth in you, as much as lieth in you. He says, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Now, this little phrase, as much as lieth in you, the idea of that phrase is, if I was to translate it extremely literally, it would say, the things from you. The things from you. In other words, He's saying, from your part, don't you be the one that ignites the fire. Don't you be the one that irritates the problem. Don't you be the one that causes the quarrel. He says, as much as lieth in you, or what comes from your side of the equation, make sure that it is not causing problems. Make sure that you're not the one that is igniting the fire. And it does. At the same time, I don't think it's condemning self-defense. Some people say, well, the Bible teaches pacifism. And we just got to sit back and let everybody walk on us. Well, I don't think that's what the Bible teaches either. You can use self-defense. If somebody breaks into my house and tries to hurt my wife, I'm going to do my best to hurt them before they hurt my wife. All right? And that's, if the law doesn't like it and I go to jail for it, well, that's the way it's going to have to be. But I'm going to protect my wife and prime property because I've got a right to do that. There's nothing wrong with self-defense. At the same time, God's saying we ought not to be the ones that are igniting the fires, trying to get things riled up and trying to stir people up. So He says, as much as, if it be possible, and He says it might not always be, but as much as lies in you, live peaceably with all men. live peaceably with all men. So he starts out here giving this instruction on not returning evil for evil. Someone does you wrong, don't retaliate, try to be peaceful and try to keep peace. The second thing he teaches us here is that we are to respond properly, not by punishing evil ourselves. And it goes kind of hand in hand with what we've talked about here, but it's another aspect of it. Look at verse number 19. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Now, avenge not. That's the payback. He says, do not avenge. Do not avenge yourselves. Now, there's some interesting things we can learn from this. We should not do this because it's not our job. He says, "There's vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord." It's God's job to get even with the people that did wrong. He'll settle the score. And this tells us that God wants to do his job and we ought to do our job. And punishment is not our job, right? And it's God's job. And he's not saying, though, that we should ignore crime. You know, some people say, well, you know, all right, so they robbed you. Don't say anything about it. We're just supposed to just forget. No, he's not saying that. He's saying we ought not to take it in our own hands. We ought not to take it in our own hands and go, you know, set up our own investigation and go, you know, break in somebody else's house, try and investigate, see whether they stole your stuff. Well, that's not our job. But we can turn it over to the law. We can turn it over to those who are in authority and have the right to do those kind of things and let them take care of it. But God says here, it's not our job to settle the score. Now, instead, we must give place to wrath. Give place to wrath. Now, the idea here of giving place is the idea of giving space. Giving space for God to do what he needs to do. Because a lot of times what happens, if we get involved and we start messing with a situation, God can't do what he was going to do because we've messed it up. He says, listen, let God take control of it. We need to stay out of the situation, turn it over to God, turn it over to the law or whatever, but let's stay out of the situation, let God take care of it. Because if we jump in the middle of it, many times we get in the way and we stop God from doing what he was going to do and stop God from doing what he needs to do. And so he says we need to give place or give space to the wrath of God. Let God take care of it. Another verse that kind of gives the same thought that helps us to understand this is over in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 27, where it says, neither give place to the devil. Neither give place to the devil. In other words, he's talking about don't give space for the devil to work in your life. And here he's talking about on a positive side, he says that we are to give space to the wrath of God. Let God have the room to do what he needs to do. And over there he's saying, don't let the devil have room to do what he wants to do. So it shows us the same kind of use of the terminology there. And we need to leave room then for God's judgment to come. Now, before the word wrath there is it has in the Greek, it has a definite article. And many times when there's a definite article, it specifies a specific kind of something. In other words, if I said, bring me a book, you can grab any book you want to, your book, your song book, your Bible, or your whatever. But if I said, bring me the blue book on the second chair, and I use the in front of it, it's a specific one. All right? And here, it literally says that we are to give place to the wrath. He's talking about a particular wrath, God's wrath. God's wrath. He said, give place to God's wrath. Let God's wrath have an opportunity to do what he wants to do. God will take care of it. We need to let God take control and let God have the way in these things instead of us getting in the way. And then he explains, he says, speaking for God, he says, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Vengeance is mine. You know, this assures us that God will settle the score justly. Sometimes we don't like to think that because we think, well, it just doesn't seem fair, you know, so-and-so needs to really have it, you know, and it seems like they're getting away without anything. Well, we need to remember, God says, I'll settle the score. If you step back and let me take care of it, I'll settle the score. And you might look at it and think, sure doesn't look like he settled it very good. Well, we need to remember, God isn't always done on this earth. And it reminds us, can you think of a psalm? One of the psalms that describes something very similar to this, where the psalmist starts out saying, you know, it's just not fair. You know, look at the whole world. Everything's going their way. Look at me. Everything's going bad. I try to live for God. Everything goes bad. The unsaved guy, he does all what he wants to do. And look at, he all seems to be benefiting. Anybody know where that psalm is? Need to know. Need to know. It'll help you. Psalm 73. Psalm 73 is Asaph. And he was frustrated and saying, all the bad guys have good things happening to them and all the good guys have bad things happening to them. And then he goes through the whole psalm and halfway through he says, I was so frustrated until I remembered that one day they're going to stand before God. And one day God's going to settle the score. One day God will take care of it. And I'll go to heaven and the unbeliever that is prospering and seems to have everything on his side is going to miss out on heaven and spend eternity in hell. You know, that's kind of my paraphrase of it. But you read Psalm 73 and you'll see what I mean. And it's the same thought here. God said, vengeance is mine. Let me take control. And so there's sometimes that, we feel like revenge. We feel like getting even. We feel like it's not fair. They got away with it. Nothing bad happened to them. Why is that? Well, one day they're going to stand before their Creator. And if God doesn't settle a score with them before then, He will settle it on Judgment Day. God will settle it. And we can leave it to Him, and He'll take care of it just fine if we stay out of the way. But sometimes if we start getting involved and we do our own thing, then God has to say, well, I can't do much now because you've already punished Him yourself, and so I'll just step back and that'll have to be good enough. And God said, it would have been far better if you let me take care of it. And so we need to let God have His way. And then He goes on in verse number 20 and reminds us how we ought to treat our enemies with kindness. Verse 20 says, therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. This is a quote from the book of Proverbs, chapter 25, verses 21 and 22. It's quoted in this, or paraphrased in this verse here. And we ought not to be enemies ourselves. All right, when he talks about therefore, if thine enemy hunger, he's not saying, I have enemies, but there's people out there that are my enemies. You know, that makes sense? I'm not to make enemies with people, but I may have enemies of people. There's people that don't like me, but I'm supposed to like them whether they like me or not. All right, that's the idea. So he says, if thine enemy hungers, so somebody that doesn't like you, just like the lady with the chickens, you know, her neighbor was her enemy. Now, she wasn't the enemy of the neighbor, but her neighbor was her enemy. He didn't like her. And so he says, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him the drink. That goes against our grain, doesn't it? You know, when we've got somebody that we know doesn't like us, and they've done everything to make our life miserable that they can, the first thought that comes to our mind isn't bake them a chicken pie. All right? But that's what God said. He said, if they're hungry, feed them. If they're thirsty, give them to drink. And then he says, for in so doing thou shalt heap coals of fire on their head. Now that's a phrase that is hard to figure out. And there's all kinds of ideas. If you read commentaries, you'll get all kinds of ideas. But let's just analyze it and think about it a little bit. In the context, we need to, first of all, decide, is he talking about doing something mean to them or something good to them? All right, you look at the context. What has he told us so far? He's told us, let me get even. Let me do the revenging. Let me take care of the problem. So there's no way that we can say, well, this heaping coals of fire on their head is getting even or payback or being mean. It can't be being mean. It doesn't fit the context. So it's something positive. It's something positive. Now, there's two ideas that are possibilities. I think the one makes more sense than the other one personally, but it could be either one. One option is this. They said that it was kind of a phrase. You know, we've got a lot of cliches in the English language, and if English isn't your first language, you probably have cliches in your language too, where a little phrase, like we might say, oh, it's raining cats and dogs. And somebody that's not used to English look out there, I don't see any cats and dogs. You know, but it's a cliche. All right, it just means it's raining a lot. All right, so we've got these kind of cliches. It might be that kind of a thing, indicating that by being kind to them, giving them food and water, that it will heap shame on them. All right, shame on them. And the idea of these coals of fire may be kind of a burning, guilty shame because of what I did. That's a possibility. I'm not so sure. To me, it is a possibility. It might be they had a cliche that really did kind of mean that. There's another way of looking at it, and that is that in their day, now see, we need to put ourselves back in that culture. One of the things that was very important in life, you know, that you didn't go to the wall and flip on the electric switch, turn on the lights. You didn't go to the stove and turn the button and click, 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 and the gas poofs open on and you got your stove going. And when it got cold, you didn't go to the heater and just turn the switch and click and it was heated up. You know, they needed fire for their cooking, fire for their heating. And if your fire went out in the night and you didn't have any reserve, well, they didn't have a box of matches handy. It was a hard work to get a fire started if you didn't have some hot coals. And so to heap coals of fire on your neighbor in this sense would be to give them a blessing. You know, he needs something to warm the house, and his fire went out. Here, you can have a scoop of mine. You can have those coals, and they'll get your fire going. That's a possibility. So maybe one of these two are the answers to it, but whatever it is, he is indicating something positive. He said, if your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him to drink. And if you do that, it will be adding blessing to him. It will perhaps cause him to be ashamed of what he did. Or perhaps it will meet a need in his life, like providing the fire that he needed to cook his food with. Whatever it was something positive and something kind. And so, as we think about that, God is telling us that we need to do good to them. When though they've done evil to me, I need to be kind to them. I need to be kind to them. And then he ends the chapter with a short, but probably one of the most powerful verses in the chapter. Verse number 21. He says, be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. Now, responding properly by not allowing evil to defeat us. We need to respond properly by not allowing evil to defeat us. He says, do not let evil overcome you. And the way that it is phrased here, it literally is saying, stop being overcome of evil. Stop being overcome of evil. The Apostle Paul was assuming, as is so often the case, that we are being overcome of evil. Somebody does wrong to us and we respond in a wrong way and evil overcomes us. And he says, stop being overcome of evil because it's already a problem in many people's lives. And perhaps it's already something that is happening in your life where you have been responding wrongly and as a result you've been overcome of evil. And he says, we must not allow evil to overcome us or to conquer us. Now, there's two ways that this can be done. This happens to us. How can evil conquer us? How can evil conquer us? Well, there's two ways that it could be. First of all, it can defeat us spiritually. If evil happens to you and you become overcome of that evil, it can defeat you spiritually. And you respond in the wrong way, you get mad, you get angry inside, you get hateful inside, and it defeats you spiritually and you become a backslidden Christian. Gets you down, defeats you, discourages you. And that is one of the ways that evil often overcomes us. And we've all been there. We've responded in a wrong way. We've gotten upset. We've gotten angry. We've said the wrong thing. We've opened our mouths without thinking first. We've responded in some wrong way. And evil has overcome us. And it has defeated us. And we walk away feeling like I showed him a thing or two. But deep down inside we feel like, yeah, but I feel like a rat for doing it. All right? And we've done that. We've been there. And we're defeated by our response. The second way that evil defeats us is by rousing us to return evil for evil. It rouses. Not only does it defeat us spiritually, but it'll also rouse us to do evil. Evil comes to me, and if evil overcomes me, and it riles me up to the point where I get, I'm going to get back at them one way or the other. And so it has overcome me and roused me to do evil. And it makes me a mean, ornery person. And God doesn't want this. You know, let's put it into our own practical scenarios. If your spouse is unkind to you, God says, do not let their evil overcome you and return evil for evil. You know, there may be little ways. You know, our spouse upsets us. They've irritated us. They've said something cross. And, you know, we aren't maybe real mean to them, but we just avoid doing some nice things for them that we usually do, or we just are, you know, go to the other side of the house and just kind of forget that they're there, and we just kind of ignore them. But we treat them in a bad way. God says here we've responded to evil. Evil's overcome us. Evil has prevailed and got us to do the wrong instead of the right. Maybe it's our neighbor or our workmate or our boss or somebody else that has done evil to us. And God says, do not let evil overcome you. When the guy at work does something unkind to you, don't let evil overcome you and you respond in a bad way. You need to be careful to guard yourself. And all of these things we've looked at so far of living peaceably and thinking before we respond and acting carefully and not trying to punish them ourselves and let God have the vengeance. All of those things, he said, if we don't do that, evil will overcome us and we'll respond with our mouth or with our actions in some way that will hurt the testimony of Christ. We'll regret it and it will be harmful to us. You know, if you let evil overcome you, you lose. And the devil wins. If you let evil overcome you, you lose, and the devil wins. And so we need to be very careful not to let evil overcome us. But he says, overcome evil with good. Overcome evil with good. The idea of good here is the word describes that which is upright and honorable and acceptable to God. To do what God would do, what would please God. You know, in order to do that, first of all, we need to determine, what would God do? I mean, that's a pretty basic thing, but we really need to know that before we can respond. And so, this thing happens. You know, the neighbor kills your chickens, throws them back over the fence, and they're laying there, blood dripping out of their neck, and you're thinking, oh, my prized chickens. What am I going to do? All right? That lady had to make a decision. She had to make a choice and a decision. What would God want me to do in that situation? Now, she didn't have time to think, you know, ahead of time on this because she wasn't anticipating. She didn't open the door to the chicken pen and said, go over there and bug his garden, chickens, and see what happens. No, she didn't do that. They got out accidentally. She didn't know what was happening. And over the fence they come. So she had to stop and think. Now, when this happens to us, problem comes up. Our spouse is cross with us. Our children get angry with us. Or the neighbor's not nice to us. Or whatever the situation is, we need to make a choice and a decision. We need to decide, what does God want me to do? Now, first thing we can do that'll help us is to place ourselves in the other person's shoes. You know what I mean? All right, just think about it. Let's just use this lady and her chickens, for example. All right, we need to think about, all right, I'll pretend I was a neighbor. And I have this nice garden, and these two neighbor chickens crawl under the fence and get over there, and they tore up my garden. What am I going to do? I'm thinking, they don't have any right to get over here. These chickens coming over here and scratching around in my yard and tearing up my flowers and eating my plants, and that's not right. All right? Now, if we look at it from that perspective, then we can see, oh, I understand why the guy got upset. All right? Because they didn't have any business on his property. They were tearing up his ground. So if you put yourself in the other person's shoes, it helps you to calm down and realize there's two ways of looking at this situation. So let's not get too upset. You know, whether it be your spouse or somebody at work or whatever, think about, all right, why did they say what they said? Why did they act like they did? Why did they treat me the way they did? Have I done something to them that upset them? And have I not responded in the way I should? Did I not fulfill something I was supposed to do? What caused them to respond like that? Think about it from their perspective, and it'll help us. But the second thing that'll help us is this. This is another opportunity to apply God's principle of evaluating or proving all things and holding fast that which is good and abstaining from evil. 1 Thessalonians 5:21-22 is those verses where he says, prove all things, hold fast that which is good, abstain from all appearance of evil. Prove it, test it, evaluate it, examine it, look at the situation and say, all right, what took place right here? What took place? Why did it happen? Did I do wrong? Was there something on my part that upset the other person? What took place here? Evaluate that and then ask yourself, how would Jesus respond? You know, a lot of times it helps us just by asking that, what would Jesus do? What would Jesus do? Would Jesus respond with anger? Would Jesus go over there and just tell him a thing or two? Or would Jesus respond calmly? And if we would think about this and we decide what God would want us to do, then it's just a matter of putting into action what God would want us to do. We need to do what he wants. And doing good to those who treat us badly is God's prescription for conquering evil. Doing good to them. You know, that's not our nature. It's not our nature to do good to someone who has used us wrongly. And good may be doing something especially loving and kind for your spouse who just hurt you. Instead of going and shutting yourself up in your room and going to the other side of the house and not talking to them for, you know, 3 hours, do something loving and kind instead. You say, well, Pastor, I just don't feel like that. Well, that's not the point. I probably wouldn't either. But that's not what God said. God didn't say, well, when you feel like it, do it. No, he said, respond right. Respond right. And so we need to think of something loving and kind to do instead of something hurtful. Good would also be being kind and friendly to the neighbor or colleague who has been mean to you. And again, that's not our nature. It's not easy. Somebody that's unkind to us and hurt us or harmed us in some way. It's not easy. Good would also be telling a person who has abused or hurt you in some way that you forgive them. You say, but they don't deserve my forgiveness. Wait a minute, that's not the point. God said, we are to forgive. God said, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. God said, if we'll forgive, then he can forgive us. But if we don't forgive, he can't forgive us. And so God's telling us that we are to go to the person that hurt us or abused us or used us wrongly or said something or did something that was unkind, and we are to forgive them. You say, but they don't deserve it. That's the whole point. He said, instead of returning evil for evil, he said, overcome evil with good. You overcome evil with good. If you come to the place where you are able to do good to the person that has hurt you, then you have overcome the evil. The evil hasn't conquered you. You've overcome the evil and were able to do good with God's help to the person that hurt you. Instead of holding revenge. Sometimes we say, well, I never had revenge. I didn't do anything back to them. But you know, inside your heart, you're bitter. Every time that person's name is mentioned, you cringe inside and your muscles kind of tighten up every time their name is mentioned. If that's the case, you are doing evil toward them because you're holding bitterness toward them. And bitterness will destroy your effectiveness for God. Bitterness is being overcome by evil. The devil is using bitterness in your life to overcome you with the evil. You say, well, I haven't revenged. I haven't gotten even with him. That's the point. True, but the devil's still using it to destroy you with that revenge or with that bitterness. And so we need to return evil, good for evil, not evil for good. Now, someone has said, those who deserve love least need it the most. And that is so true. And that really fits into what we're talking about here. Those that deserve love, the least are enemies, those that are mean to us, those that are unkind, those that are hurting us and doing bad things to us. They deserve it the least. They need it the most. So God's asking us as Christians to respond in a way that would honor him. And you know, remember, this whole chapter is tied together. We started out in verse number 1 when God said, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice to God, holy and acceptable to God, which is a reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. God said, you cannot respond in a right way if you have not surrendered yourself to God. If you're not willing to do God's will, if you're not allowing God to work in you and through you, you will not respond this way because this is not the way our flesh responds. Our flesh wants revenge. It wants to get even. It wants to be bitter. It wants to be angry and hateful. And God says, no, that is wrong. We need to respond lovingly, tenderly, forgivingly. And you say, but I can't. You can through Christ. You can't on your own. And that's why we've got to surrender our lives to God. You know, if you're here today and have never trusted Jesus as your Savior, you can't do this. You will find this very difficult because you've got to have God's help. Because without God's help, this is so absolutely foreign and against our nature to respond in a tender, loving way to someone who has hurt us. But God says, if we know Him as our Savior, He can give us strength and help us to do that, which is unnatural for us. And it shows Christ in our actions. And so this morning, you think about your own situation. Is there someone in your life that has done evil to you? Your spouse, a child, a neighbor, workmate, boss, a relative, someone who's hurt you, someone who's treated you unkindly or in a wrong way and harmed you in some way, and you've held that against them in bitterness in your heart, and you've tried to think of ways of getting even and doing, you know, if those are the situations that you think of in your life right now, what you need to do is you need to say, God, I have been wrong. I have been trying to return evil for evil. And God, I can see that that is not your plan. I've gotten in your way, God. And I've messed things up for you so you couldn't do your vengeance like you said you would. And Lord, would you please forgive me and help me to be able to let you take control and help me to love and forgive those that hate and misuse me. That's what we got to do. It's not easy. But that's what God asks us to do. And if you're going to be a happy, successful, fruitful Christian that pleases God, we've got no choice. That's what God says He expects from us. And it all begins with surrender. And then it builds from there and requires action. You cannot hear this message today and say, that's right, that's exactly what I need, and not do anything about it. If there is a need, if there is someone in your life that you know has hurt you and you have not given it over to God and forgiven them and gotten it right, you cannot ignore this and be right with God. You can't. We've got to take action and let God have His way.